Okay. There are source sheets being passed around. I'm afraid they may not have made enough copies. So if anyone has a Tanakh, that will be helpful also in lieu of the sheet. There's a fairly well-known Gemara, which is the first source on the sheet. Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Gittin, which describes a midrashic image. Amar b'chir barabin, amar b'shub ben korcha, sachli zoken echad mi'anshe Yerushalayim, b'vika zo harag nivuzaradon rav tabachim masayim b'chasasre ribo. Talks about this valley where an old man from Yerushalayim said that Nivuzaradan, who was the commander of the Babylonian army at the time of the destruction, the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, killed 210,000 people. Of Yerushalayim harag tishim v'arba ribo, and another almost a million in Yerushalayim al evan achas, which are just astronomical numbers, ad shehalach daman v'naga b'damo shel Zechariah. Until the blood of all these people touched the blood of Zechariah. And then it goes on to tell us the story of the blood of this Zechariah. Ashkeche ledame de Zechariah dehava kamirtach v'sali. This Nebuzaradan entered the Beis HaMikdash and he saw the blood of Zechariah boiling on the ground. Omar, and he said to, that's an unusual sight. He said to the people, Maihai, what's going on with this blood boiling on the ground? And the people didn't want to tell him. So they made something up. Amrulei dam zvachim diishtefuch. They said, well, you know, this is a temple. We sacrifice here. There's blood on the floor. Nebuzaradan didn't buy that story. You don't become general of the Babylonian army if you're not a smart guy. So he did a test. Aisu dami velo idmu. He's slaughtered an animal, he saw the blood was not identical, was not similar. Amarlu, he said to him, tell me the truth. Imamritu li mutav. Vilav, misariknu li visaraychu bimisarike de parizale. If you tell me the truth, fine, and if not, I'm going to scrape your skin off your body, I'm going to kill you in a horrible way. They realized they had no choice. Amrulay, my name, Allah. What can we do? We'll tell you the truth. What's this blood? Neviya havaban. We had this prophet among us, Dahava Kamuchachlan Bemile Dishmaya, who used to come and give us tochacha, give us musar about religious matters. And Kaminani Love Vikatilnale. We arose against him and we killed him. V'hakamashanim Dlokanaich Dame. And it's a bunch of years. If you do the math, about 250 years. And his blood still won't rest. Amar Lehu, son of Vuzaradan, said, Anam efayasnale, I will make sure that his blood rests. I say, Sanhedri gedola, v'sanhedri kitana, kata li lave velonach. He brought all the dayanim from the Batei Din, the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedri kitana, and he slaughtered all these rabbis, and the blood did not rest. Bachurimu v'sulos, kata li lave velonach. He brought in young men and women, slaughtered them, and still not. I see Tinokos Shabbos Rabban, he brought in children and started slaughtering the children, Vilonach, and still the blood did not rest. Until finally, even this evil general said to the blood, Amrlei Zechariah, Zechariah, Tovim Shebehen Ibaditim, I've already slaughtered and killed the best among them. Nechalach Davdinu Lekulu, do you want me to kill them all? Kedamrlei Hachinach, and then the blood rested. And this was apparently, according to this Gemara, was such a striking thing that even the Nebuzaradan himself was moved by Ishata Hirher Tshuva Bedate, and he ran off and he became a ger. That's the Gemara. I don't think we're meant to take this story as a literal historic event. There's a message here. And the message is that the Chazal saw the murder of Zechariah as the event, even though it was hundreds of years earlier, the event that led to the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. Who was this Zechariah and why was he killed? It's in the Navi, it's in the Tanakh, in two psukim, in Divrei Hayamim Beis, which most people don't get to. Even those who learn Tanakh don't get to Divrei Hayamim. I learned years ago that's a mistake. You have to learn Divrei Hayamim. You have to learn it Shmuel HaMalachim with Divrei Hayamim. So what I'd like to do, In order to understand this Gemara, really, is to take a few minutes to read the Psukim, not just the Psukim about Zechariah, that won't tell us anything. We need to understand the context. First in Malachim, where the story is not even mentioned, and then the parallel passage in Divrei Hayamim, and then I think perhaps we can understand what was it about this one particular event that Chazal were trying to tell us, this is what ultimately led to the Churban. What's that image of the blood that never stops boiling? And that it takes almost the destruction of the nation to avenge the death of Zechariah. So to understand this, we have to go back to the days of Yoash Melech Yehuda. And we'll read first, if you have the sheet, or if not, Malachim Beis, Perek Yud Aleph, and Yud Bet. Let's understand who this Yoash was. Yoash Melech Yehuda was a fascinating figure with a very unusual life. To understand him, you have to really understand his father and his grandmother. His father was Achaziah Melech Yehuda, this was a period of time when the Malchei Yehuda and the Malchei Yisrael sort of got along. At times we fought each other, at times we got along. Beis Achav, Achav was probably one of the worst kings ever, had ruled in Yisrael, and it's either his daughter or his sister that was married to Achaziah Melech Yehuda. And Achaziah was actually killed by Yehu ben Nimshi when Elisha Hanavi told Yehu that it was time to eradicate all of Beis Achav, and he killed both Yoram, the son of Achav, and he killed also Achaziah Melech Yehuda. And then what happened next is even more troubling. Achaziah's mother, who was from Beis Achav herself, whose name was Ataliah, in the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, Vatalia Eim Achaziahu Ra'asa Ki Meis Bina Vatakem Vata'abed Et Kol Zera Mamlacha. She wants to become the queen herself. And in order to make sure that happens, she kills off anyone that's an heir to the throne. You understand what that means? She's killing her own grandchildren, her own grandsons. She kills off all of the potential heirs to the throne so that she can be the queen. But there's one who gets away. Vatikach Yehosheva Bas HaMelech Yoram Achos Achaziahu Es Yoash Ben Achaziah Vatignovo So Mitoch Beis Bnei HaMelech Hamum Masim Oso Bes Menikto B'Chadar HaMitos Vayastiro So Mibnei Asaliah Velo Humas. He had an aunt whose name was Yehosheva, and she happened to be married to the Kohen Gadol, the daughter of the king, or the sister of the king, I'm sorry, married to the Kohen Gadol, whose name was Yehoyada. They took the baby, the little baby Yoash, and smuggled him out of the palace when all these executions were taking place, and they hid him in the Beis HaMikdash. And Yoash grew up hidden. No one knew he was alive. And the Navi goes on, we're not going to read everything because I only have a few minutes, how Ataliah brought all kinds of Avodah Zarah into the Beis HaMikdash, what her relative Achav had done in Shomron, she now did in Yerushalayim. They set up Mizbachos to the Baal and everything, and Asherah. And meanwhile, she thought she was the only one left, but really Yoash was growing up in the Beis HaMikdash himself. And then they waited till he'd be a minimal age, 7 years old, they staged a coup. Yehoyada HaKohen himself worked out with the other Kohanim. They had weapons with them, Kohanim with weapons in the Beis HaMikdash, if you can imagine such a thing. It's all here in the Navi. And they put guards at all the doors, and they brought out baby Yoash, not baby anymore, young man Yoash, and they put him up, and they said, Yechi HaMelech, and they anointed him king. And when Ataliah heard this, she ran to the Beis HaMikdash to see what was going on, and they grabbed her, and they took her out, and they executed her. And then they anointed him as king. And they went and they destroyed all the Avodah Zarah that she had brought into the country. And then we read the next parak, Parak Yud Beis. Ben Sheva Shanim Yehoash B'malcho. He was 7 years old, he became king. Vayas Yehoash Hayashar Beinei Hashem Ko Yamav Asher Horahu Yehoyada HaKohen. And that's a very interesting pasuk because it's kind of ambiguous. What's it telling us? Yoash did Hayashar Beinei Hashem Kol Yamav, right? I skipped the pasuk, I'm sorry. He ruled for 40 years, from the age of 7 to the age of 47. And he did Hayasher Beinei Hashem Kol Yamav Asher Horahu Yehoyada HaKohen. And there's, if you think about it, there's two ways to read that pasuk. It's not clear what the Navi is saying here. One way to read it is, he did that which was right in Hashem's eyes his entire life, which was that which he had been taught by his uncle slash stepfather, Yehoyada HaKohen. Or, you could read it a little differently. Vayaz Hayasher Beinei Hashem, Kol Yamav Asher Horahu. All of that part of his life during which Yehoyada was there teaching him, that's when he did Hayasher Beinei Hashem. Because at some point Yehoyada died. And it's not clear what the Navi is saying. We're then told, again, I'm not going to read everything inside for lack of time, but I strongly urge you at some point to learn this. We're told of one major project that Yoash did. He set out to renovate the Beis HaMikdash. And maybe just a few of the psukim. It starts, Vayomer Yoash, Pasukei, El HaKohanim, Kol Kesef HaKadashim, Eshayuva Beis Hashem, Kesef HaVeirish, Kesef Nafsho, Sefil, Kol Kesef HaShay Yaleh Aliv, Ish Labi Beis Hashem, Yichul Hem HaKohanim, Ish Macharo, Vehem Yichazku, Es Beda Kabayis, Lechol Asher Yin Matzei Sham Badeh. Okay, he told them to raise money to renovate the Beis HaMikdash, and later on we're told that they weren't doing a good enough job, the Kohanim. He went to his uncle Yehoyada, he said, he's the king, right? He rebuked his uncle, you're not doing a good enough job, we need to raise more money. He said, we're going to take it away from you, we're going to do the job directly. He put what some call the first pushka in history. It says literally he built a big box with a hole in it for people to put money in, a donation box when they came to the Beis HaMikdash, and he renovated the entire Beis HaMikdash. The question is, why specifically Yoash is the one to renovate the Beis HaMikdash? Why was this being done now? Could be, if you do the calculations, since Shlomo built the bayis, it's 125 years. Maybe it was time. More likely, it's also due to the fact of what Asalia had done previously. It seems that she brought in all the Avodah Zarah and the Mikdash was certainly neglected and maybe damaged. But maybe that's not all. Maybe there's a reason that specifically, of all the kings, it was Yoash who renovated the Mikdash. After all, he grew up in the Mikdash, right? His whole childhood was only knew as a child was the Beis HaMikdash. He grew up in the Beis HaMikdash. And maybe he felt a deep connection to the Mikdash, more than everybody else. More even than the Kohen Gadol. He was so zealous to renovate the Beis HaMikdash that he rebuked his uncle, you're not doing a good enough job, we need to raise more money, we need to do this. And more than anyone else, he felt the pain of the Mikdash. And Yoash is the one who renovated the Mikdash. And he's praised for that. But the end of the story of Yoash, therefore, is so much more puzzling. Look at Pasuk Yudchet. Oz yalech Hazael melech Aram vayilachim al gas vayil kida vayasem Hazael panav la'alos al Yerushalayim. It was a king Hazael from Aram, the neighboring Syria, that invaded the country and actually was threatening Yerushalayim. Yoash, the one who renovates the Mikdash, is now facing a threat of Churban. So he had no choice. What did he do? Vayikach Yoash Melech Yehuda es kol hakadoshim asher hikdishu Yoshafat v'yoram v'chazia v'osav malchei Yehuda v'es kadoshav v'es kol hazahav ha'nimtza be'otzros beis Hashem uveis ha'melech v'yishlach l'chazayel melech haram v'yal me'al Yerushalayim. In order to avoid this churban, he bribed Hazael with a huge amount of money, and it worked. Hazael took the money and left. But where did he get the money from? He had no choice. He had to raid the entire royal treasury, all of his money, and the money that had put aside by the previous kings, and kol azav animtza ba'otzros beis Hashem. He had to raid the treasury, the Beis HaMikdash himself. Yoash, the one who dedicated everything to renovate the Beis HaMikdash, he was forced to defile the Beis HaMikdash himself. How is that possible? And what happens next? His tragic end. Vayakumu avadav, vayikshiru kasher, vayaku es Yoash, beis milo ayoretzila. and he's assassinated by his servants at the age of 47. That's how he meets his end. And the Navi doesn't explain. We have a king, and we're told Vayas Hayasher Beinei Hashem, and he did something no one else did. He renovated the whole Beis Hamikdash, and then he's forced to defile it with his own hands, and he's murdered at a young age. What's going on? That's it. The Navi doesn't say here, but in Divrei Hayamim, it does. And the next source on the page, or if you have a Tanakh, Divrei Hayamim Beis Perek Chav Dalet, both for lack of time and for the fact that this is not exactly Tisha B'Av appropriate, I'll simply note that the book of Divrei Hayamim is parallel to the books of Shmuel and Malachim. It covers the same time period and describes many of the same events, but there are differences between them. There are things that are told in Malachim and not told in, or Shmuel and Malachim and not discussed in Divrei Hayamim, and the opposite, as we're about to see. Notice, I started with Zechariah ben Yoyada, and we didn't see that name, Bechlal. He's going to be mentioned only here in Divrei Hayamim. And also, even when the same events are told, sometimes it's identical word for word, but sometimes there are nuances and there are differences, and they're always significant. And you have to always learn both and try to understand what perspective each is giving us and why we're being told the same thing differently. So, let's look at Divrei Hayamim Bet Perek Chav Dalet. And we have the same opening we had there, but what was a little bit ambiguous in Malachim is not ambiguous here. Ben Sheva Shanim Yoash B'malcho V'arbaim Shana Malach B'Yerushalayim Shein Imo Tzivya B'Ber Sheva V'yas Yoash Hayasha B'nei Hashem Kol Yemei Yehoyada HaKohen. Right? In Malachim it says Kol Yamav Asher HoRahu. Right? It wasn't clear what that meant, but here it's very clear. Yoash's life has to be divided into two, or Yoash's reign has to be divided into two periods. The first part of his reign, when he was a child and a young man, and Yehoyada was still alive, and afterwards, Vayas Yoash Hayasha Beinei Hashem Kol Yemei Yehoyada HaKohen. And then we're told a parallel account, which we're not going to read here. It's a little bit different how it's told here, but the same story of how he renovated the Beis Hamikdash. So we'll skip that here, and we'll turn to Pasuk Tesvav. Vayizkan Yehoyada, Vayisba Yamim, Vayamos, Ben Mea, Ushloshim, Shanam, Bimoso. Yehoyada, this great righteous Kohen Gadol, who risked his life to save the king, lived to a very old age, 130 years old, and then he died. Vayikberuhu Be'ir David Im Hamlachim, Ki Asatova B'Yisrael Vim Elohim Uveso. And they buried him with the kings of Malchei Yehuda. Very unusual. He wasn't a king. He was a Kohen. And they buried him in the Kivrei HaMalachim. And why? Because he really was a king. Right? There was a king. And the king was 7 years old. Who was actually doing all those things? At least for part of the time? It was Yehoyada. Right? Vayas Yoash HaYasha Asher HoRo Yehoyada Kohen. And therefore they gave him the honor of a king. And they buried him with the kings. V'acharei Mos Yehoyada, and after he died, Bau Sarei Yehuda V'yishtachavu LaMelech Az Shama HaMelech Aleihem. Very obscure pasuk. After Yehoyada died, the Sarei Yehuda, the officers of Yehuda, came to the king, to Yoash, and bowed to him, and then he listened to them. What did they say? What did he hear? Doesn't say. Vayazvu es beis Hashem Elokei Avoseihem. They abandoned the Beis HaMikdash. Vayavdu es ha'asherim es ha'atzabim. And they went back to worshipping Avodah Zarah. Vayhi ketzef al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim be'ashmasam zos. And due to this sin, there was a great anger. Vayishlach b'hem neviim, and Hashem sent prophets. Lashivam el Hashem, vayayidu vam b'lo ezinu. So Hashem sent neviim to tell the people, this is the wrong approach. But they didn't listen. And now we come to the story that we started with, that the Gemara referred to. This is it. These two psukim, that's the whole thing that we have in Tanakh. V'ruach Elohim lavsha es Zechariah ben Yehoyada HaKohen. This is Zechariah the Navi. That the blood was boiling was the son of Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol. Okay, which makes him the son of the Kohen Gadol. It makes him the Kohen Gadol himself. And it also makes him essentially the adopted brother of Yoash, right? Cousin, but also, but they grew up also as brothers, right? Ruach Elokim lavsha Zechariah ben Yoyada Kohen. The Spirit of God enveloped him. Vayamod me'al la'am. Vayom alehem ko'amar Elohim. Lama ten ovrim es mitzvos Hashem velo satzlichu. Ki azavtim es Hashem vayazob eschem. He did what an Avi's supposed to do. He got up and he rebuked the people in the Beis HaMikdash. Chazal say it was Yom Kippur when this happened. Vayikshiru alav, the people ganged up against him. Vayirgemuhu even, and they stoned him. B'mitzvas ha-melech, at the command of Yoash. B'chatzar Beis Hashem, in the Beis HaMikdash, ordered by Yoash himself, they stoned Zechariah. V'lo zachar Yoash ha-melech ha-chesed, asher asa Yoyada aviv imo, and he didn't recall the great kindness that Yoyada had done to him. V'yarog esbino, he killed his son. U'chemo so'ama, and as Zechariah was dying, his last words were, Yeireh Hashem v'yidrosh, may God see and avenge. Assumedly, that's the source for the midrash of the boiling blood, right? That was his last words, where God may take revenge. And so midrashically, the image is that his blood continued to boil, and ultimately that's what led to the churba. And then we're told, the similar thing to what we were told before, about how Aram came and he had to pay them off, but now all of a sudden it sounds a little different, right? We're not so astonished that Yoash did these things, that had to do all that. And in fact, when it tells us that Yoash was assassinated, it actually tells us in Pasuk Chafei, Uvelechta Mimenu Ki Azvu Oso, right? His Kashu Alav Avadav. First of all, we find out here that he was actually wounded in battle against the Aramim. They didn't just take the money and go. They actually attacked him a bit. And as he was lying there wounded, that's when his servants took the opportunity to assassinate him, but it tells us his kashu alav avadav bidmei bnei Yehoyada HaKohen, that this was to avenge him for what he had allowed to happen or caused to happen to Zechariah ben Yehoyada. Okay, so first of all, the story looks very different now than it did in Malachi. We need to understand why such a different picture was presented to us. But also, we have to ask ourselves, what happened to Yoash? Like, how is that possible? That such a righteous king who did such wonderful things could turn to around and what? Yeah, the Navi said, he lo zachar es ha-chesed. But how? But why? And I think there are several possibilities. I'll raise two quickly, and then I'll focus on the third, which is mentioned in a midrash, one that I think is the real message. Remember what we read. First we read that the Sarah Yehuda came to Yoash, and they spoke to him, they bowed to him, and he listened to them. It doesn't tell us what they said. And then they went out and they worshipped the Avodah Zarah. So one possibility is that he was simply afraid of them. And as long as Yehoyada was alive, Yehoyada was in control, but that Yoash was just a weak person who wasn't able to, and they threatened him. Maybe something like that. Or another variation might be that he didn't really understand exactly what was going on. Maybe they simply manipulated him. Remember, Yoash grew up in the Mikdash, and he was always being told what to do by Yehoyada. Maybe these people sort of manipulated him, and they didn't make clear to him what was actually going on, and maybe they told him things about Zechariah that weren't true, and he's blamed because he didn't become the king and take charge. Those are possibilities, but I want to raise a different one, which we have here in the last source on the page. Midrash Shmos Rabbah, lists three people who made themselves into a god. And one of them is Yoash HaKohen. Yoash minayin shasa atzmo eloa. How do you know he made himself into a god? Dechsiv v'acharei mos Yehoyada bau sarei Yehuda v'yishtachavu lamelech az shama melech aleh. Now, when you bow to a king, you're bowing to a king. That's okay. That's even allowed in halacha. But the Midrash reads this, mau v'yishtachavu lamelech shaso eloa, that they bowed to him not as a king, but they bowed to him and they treated him as a god. V'az shama melech aleh, and he believed it. And how did they do this? Or why did they do this? Amrulo, they said to him, Ilulei sha'ata Eloha, if you wouldn't be a god, lo yisa yotze la'achar sheba shamim beis kodesh ha'kadoshim. You were born in the Beis HaMikdash. You lived in the Beis HaMikdash. How could you have survived? Anyone who steps foot in the Kodesh Kadoshim dies immediately. You must be God. Amar lahem, he said, Kachu, yeah, you're right. Al shama melech aleihem bekibel al atzmo lasos eloa bishchis lenafsho. And therefore, essentially, that's the way that Chazal say that this midrash at least says that it happened, that Yoash began to believe himself, and the people began to believe that he was avodah zarah, and he was a god, and that was the root of all the avodah zarah. And when Zechariah challenged that, that's what led to this tragedy. Even though it's still difficult to accept. Because Yoash, we saw was such a holy, such a righteous person. But perhaps what's going on here is something a little bit more subtle. Yoash grew up in the Beis HaMikdash. Yoash was dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, maybe almost obsessed with the Beis HaMikdash, in a way that caused him to have a lack of perspective. He saw the Mikdash and only the Mikdash. If we remember what we read yesterday in the Haftarah, Yeshayahu HaNavi said to the people, Lama li rov zivcheichem? You think I want your korbanos? You think I want your korbanos, Hashem says to the people? And the answer should have been, yeah, we did think that. You commanded us to bring them. And obviously, what Yeshayahu is saying is not that Hashem doesn't want our korbanos. He wants our karbanos when they're brought in the right way for the right reasons, and if we're sinning and we're doing the wrong things, the karbanos are not going to help. It's a message of Yeshayahu, other Nevi'im also. And there's a danger when we get too wrapped up in certain aspects of Avodas Hashem, and we lose perspective of what those things are really meant to represent. So you can have a situation where a person loves the Mikdash and cares about the Mikdash and is dedicated to the Mikdash, but sees only the Mikdash, and doesn't understand what the Mikdash is all about. And that can lead to a terrible distortion where the people come to him and they say, and it's really about you, and it's really about... And ultimately, it's that lack of perspective, that tragic failure that Chazal see in the Churban. And I think that's also the reason that we have these two Svarim that presented to us very differently. Sefer Malachim makes Yoash look like a great tzaddik. Sefer Divrei Hayamim makes him look like a great Rasha. They're both true, and therefore neither one is true. They're both two sides of the same coin, right? He wasn't an evil person. He was a holy person with good intentions who made tragic mistakes that ultimately led to this terrible event of the murder of Zechariah. And it's those same mistakes as they replayed throughout history that ultimately led to the Churban. And if this analysis is correct, so then the messages for us are very clear. The way to rebuild the Mikdash is certainly to feel the pain of the Mikdash, as Yoash did, to feel its loss, which is so hard after so many thousands of years, and at the same time to realize what the Mikdash really represents and to correct those flaws and those sins and those mistakes that the Nevi'im spoke to us about, which include, if you read Yirmiyahu, for example, he has a long list of a catalog of all the things we did wrong, and include mitzvos ben adam l'makom, like Avodah Zarah and like Chilul Shabbos and other things. And they include at least as much and even more mitzvot ben adam l'chavero, making sure that we're kind to poor people and that we treat each other properly and that we're honest. And all of these things are tied up in one. And I think that's the message of the tragic story of Zechariah ben Yoyada. Oh, yeah?